Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Tuesday, the 30th of September. Welcome to Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests discussing the issues of the day with you for the next 2 hours. If you've got anything you want to discuss, be it local, national, international, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
A variety of issues to discuss today, but before we do any of that...
Great savings on all Nessun products at Mikolchon. Up to 24 months interest-free. No hidden fees. Proud sponsors of the international news headlines on TRE. Mikolchon, for a great night's sleep.
So we're looking at the national, international headlines this morning, starting off today with breaking news, of course, late yesterday overnight. The Guardian leads on the ultimatum given to Hamas by the US and Israel. Accept proposals for peace in Gaza or face the consequences. Daily Telegraph carries the headline, Trump to govern Gaza with Blair. Paper says Tony Blair has been working on a post-war plan for Gaza since the 7th of October attacks by Hamas. The Times says the former prime minister is back from the wilderness, but adds that his involvement carries risks in the form of being bound to an unpredictable US President Donald Trump. The Daily Mirror leads on the introduction of online hospitals with appointments booked online to be announced by Prime Minister Keir Starmer at the Labour conference. The paper's editorial stresses that 2.8 million people in the UK lack internet access and urges some provision to be made for them. Keir will, in his speech, describe economic growth as the antidote to division. That's according to The Guardian. Downing Street aides tell The Telegraph it will be the Prime Minister's most political speech to date. Financial Times says the Chancellor opened the door for tax rises when she used her conference speech to appeal for fiscal discipline. Rachel Reeves lit the fuse for another tax bombshell, is how The Daily Express describes it. Daily Mail reports that the Chancellor is plotting a VAT raid on the middle classes with private healthcare in the firing line. The Sun lauds her stated ambition to abolish youth unemployment, but suggests Reeves should focus on the high number of young people who are on the sick, the paper says, obviously on benefits. The Times reports that the Chancellor is facing competition from China over a vast sum confiscated from a Chinese fraudster who pleaded guilty in London to money laundering. And the Treasury is said to have earmarked more than £5 billion in seized cryptocurrency to boost the public finances. But the Times says Beijing has staked a claim based on the fact that money comes from a scheme targeting its citizens. The case is now the focus of intense diplomatic immunity. That's according That's according to the paper. So, those headlines from the top today. Financial Times: Labour opens door to budget tax rise as Reeves appeals for fiscal discipline. Meanwhile, the Metro: things can only get better. Gloomy warnings by the Prime Minister and the Chancellor. The iPaper: Reeves signals tax hikes as workers face stealth rise of over £600. Daily Express: it's the same old tax rise pain with Labour. Daily Mail: Reeves plots a VAT attack on private health, and they call it Labour's politics of spite. The Guardian: accept Gaza peace deal or face the consequences, Hamas told. The Times: Israel supports Trump plan to end war in Gaza. Meanwhile, the Mirror: Starmer's NHS revolution, hospital appointment, the stress being on app. The Daily Telegraph: Trump to govern Gaza with Blair. The Sun, J.K. Rowling and the Gobful of Ire. This is the an ongoing dispute between author Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling and Emma Watson, who played Hermione Granger in the films. And finally, Daily Star. Daily Star says that Sir Keir Starmer will use his address to attack Reform UK leader Nigel Farage. And it says, Keir tells Farage, fork you, Nige, Starmer's rallying cry. And those, for better or worse, are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 30th of September.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
If you want to get involved with the poll on Facebook that we're running today as well, go to Talk Radio Europe Official. I'm going to be talking at some point about digital ID cards in the UK. Are you in favour of them at the moment? 34% of you are in favour. 66% of you are not. Comments coming in already. You're not backwards and going forwards, which is, that's a big, as the saying goes, that's a biggie. I'll look at that a bit later. As anxious said to the bishop, joined in the studio. Well, come on. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo. Morning to you, Andres.
Good morning, Giles. Good morning, everyone.
I hope you're fine and dandy. And sitting next to him, live and direct, it's Al.
To his right.
To his right. Absolutely. Or, no, from my to my left.
Your left.
My left.
Everybody's to your left, Giles. Yeah,
exactly.
Because you're a greenhouse.
I'm a greenhouse.
It's a conservative.
Conservative with a small end. Anyway, Labour Party conference. Of Alf. Morning to you, Alf. How are you
good
doing?
Good morning, Giles. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Good morning.
Right, then, looking at the comments already coming in, and I think Rich is out there as well. Good morning. Tut, face the consequences other than mass genocide. Right, okay. So where do you want to kick off this morning, then, panel? I mean, looking at the headlines... there seems to be split between Labour Party, Sir Keir Starmer's speech today, which is suspected to attack Reform UK amongst other things. Obviously, there have also been developments in Gaza as well. What do we want to kick off with this morning, then, panel? Who wants to go first?
I'm sure Alf wants to go first, but I'll go first.
Well, because all I would say is I couldn't believe that news last night that Trump, cleverly, I think, has now put Hamas behind the eight ball. It's down to Hamas now. It's nothing to do with Netanyahu. It's nothing to do with Israel. This is all about Hamas. You want a deal, you do it now, or else suffer the consequences. That's the third time he said that. Third time we've got to this. So it really is, you're behind the eight ball now. You've either got to put up or you're going to be shut up.
I think the focus is now completely on Hamas. Should have never been out of the focus. I think that was a mistake by the international community to shift the focus to Israel when it should have always been the focus on Hamas. The options here to move forward is that they have to give up the weapons. They have to get those hostages back to Israel, those who are alive, and unfortunately the bodies will have to be returned, and to get out of any political influence in the Gaza Strip. And that should have never been out of the focus of the international community. The fact that it's now on the table, the focus is back, and it's been backed by von der Leyen and the European Union. It's been backed even by President Sanchez in Spain.
I was going to say,
that's unbelievable. So everyone is backing this peace proposal that is on the table. Some of the Arab countries, I heard someone saying today, some of the moderate Arab countries, I don't know any moderate Arab country, but then you...
Well, those in Jordan will be throwing things at the wireless.
And the focus now is to see what Iran will do with this peace deal, because they are the ones that are moving the puppets, and whether they will agree to it or not. But at least the focus is on Hamas. It should have never been out of Hamas, who was the ones who are the seed of the whole problem. And if this goes through, at least we will see some food getting through to civilians. Good, nothing to do with the conflict, and we can move forward. Now, the proposal of getting Tony Blair to be some kind of governor of the area, I mean, I don't know if it's a joke or not, but it seems to me it's a joke. But anyway, listen, the most important thing is that there is a peace proposal on the table, and from there we can build, you know, some kind of peace. Let's hope that this is a way forward rather than... Because if it's not... The consequence of that, it'll be brutal for Gaza, because I think Israel will say, okay, you had your chance, you had your peace proposal on the table, you said no, now, you know, Netanyahu said it yesterday, they will finish the job. And that's, no, nobody wants to see that.
And I think we've got a slight problem, because everybody's going to go overboard about, you know, this is the solution, this is the way forward, and nobody's looking at, yeah, but what are the hurdles? What are the rest of the hurdles that everybody's got to overcome? The first hurdle, in my view, for Hamas, is going to be that they're going to be exposed, because there's always been a view that Hamas never really knew where all the bodies were. And I say bodies in the politest terms. When they took all the hostages, it wasn't just Hamas. It was small groups of people in Gaza who took some of the people away. Whether they were dead or alive is irrelevant. But Hamas is now going to be exposed, because if they can't, because the head count by Israel is specific. There are this many people still to be returned home. And if Hamas can't produce those bodies, that's the first question mark over them. The second question mark, or the second issue for Hamas, and with all due respect, moderates in the Middle East is about the Middle East. It's not about what you and I think about what are moderate people. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, those sort of countries want peace in the Middle East. As far as from there, you talk Yemen and you go, what's Saudi Arabia getting involved in Yemen for? Because that's what they're saying, is we want peace in our region. So they are the moderates in their region. They are the ones who are suppressing the extremities. And sometimes you have to give to them. I'll come back on Blair.
Right, getting live to the lines we go. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. It's Jason. How are you?
Morning, Jason.
I wasn't going to call, but I was respectfully outraged. What's the gentleman's name on the panel?
We've got two.
Well, I know there's Alf there. But what's the gentleman?
Andres, Alf and Andres today. It's the 80.
I want to respectfully disagree with you there, and I think you should rephrase this. Israel should take the consequences or else. And I hold Hamas and Israel with equal disdain. So I'm not taking sides. Two wrongs don't make a right, as they always call it. I'm on the side of humanity, okay? What started off with this appalling taking of the hostages then evolved into something else. So what you're saying is not correct, because let's call it genocide. We can split in definitions of what we do. You know, if this was Putin doing it, you'd be saying bad boy, right? Because Israel's doing it and they're on our team. It's okay, but it's not okay because they're killing indiscriminately women and children. So how can you say, take the emphasis off Israel just because they're on our team and they're the good guys, right? But they're not. They should know better given their history. And how can you say it? It's like both sides are wrong. Israel are the ones, even if politicians come out with a rhetoric and never do things like they do with Putin, putting sanctions on and they would enforce the war criminal thing. I doubt they would with this this devil guy that's in charge.
But the thing is, though, I mean, there is an international, a warrant out for him. So, the only place he can go at the moment is basically the States. So
but would it be enforced? It would be for Putin. The sanctions went straight away on Russia. I mean, normal Russian people, just like normal Israel people, are innocent in this. They've just got a lunatic Zionist that doesn't represent the people. Right? That is cruel. Right? So don't tell me the argument comes away from him, because that sort of gets Israel off the hook. What they've done is in my opinion, genocide. And many people are saying the same. So why can they do what they want to do and Russia can't? What's the difference? Everybody's just as bad as each other. No, everybody's just as bad.
This proposal, do you think, Jason, is going to help clear the way?
Well, I just don't know with this guy. I mean, this guy is just not. He's just cruel, isn't he? I just think he's broken the agreement that was made many years ago for Palestine, for people to live there. Was it the United Nations? And they resettle people. He just does what he wants.
Jason?
And he can, because he's a nuclear power and he's got big friends.
It's good to hear from you as always. Thanks for your call in. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page, Talk Radio Official. Andreas?
I can't believe that we just said that the focus is shifted back to Hamas, where it should have always been, and putting pressure on them, seeking for peace. Peace for their own people, and the first caller we get shifts the focus back onto Israel.
No, Jason didn't do that. He never does it. Andreas, Jason said quite clearly, I'm on the side of humanity. I blame both parties. So he's not agreeing with Hamas or Israel. He's saying both sides are wrong and it needs to be sorted out. So I listen to Jason carefully because he comes on almost every week with the same line. I'm in favour of dealing with humanity. So
everyone is in favour of dealing with humanity,
Well, Netanyahu doesn't appear to be. Putin doesn't appear to be. You can go around the circle. Hamas doesn't appear to be.
Exactly.
There's a whole pile of these things about what humanity is. Humanity is a strange word because it's a mythical word, isn't it? You can't put a finger on it and say, this is what it means. Humanity is about one person caring about another person and not poking them in the eye and not, disrupting them and living in harmony and all of those sorts of things. And unfortunately, I don't think they ever will. A two-state solution is a solution, but it will never be, we're going to live side by side they will live in side by side in peace, maybe, but that won't stop the people who hate Israel hating Israel. It won't stop the Israelis saying they hate us and want to kill us. It won't stop that, but it may bring peace to the area, which is what I've been saying for years now. I've been involved with the Middle East for years and years and years and years, part of organisations and all that, but there is no, the only solution can only come from them, the same as in Ireland. The solution had to come from the Irish people. It didn't come from English people
from being
telling
imposed,
Ireland.
From being imposed,
It doesn't work. You can't impose. You can impose a peace settlement like they did in Bosnia and stuff like that. You can send the Blue Helmets in to keep some sort of peace, but it doesn't stop the hatred. It doesn't stop the, people being opposed to each other. It doesn't stop that. It just controls it. And so what we're seeing with this, which is why I'm saying they've put Hamas behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
Because they are the ones who have now got to proceed into a position that says, okay, we want to live in peace. Their motto is, we want to kill all the Israelis. So you've got to move them one hell of a long way from their position of, we're going to kill all the Israelis, to, okay, now we're going to live in peace.
You yourself are now defending what Israel is doing by just mentioning what the motto of Hamas is, which is to kill all the Israelis. So that in itself is saying that what the Israelis are doing are defending themselves, and that's it's what it that's what
I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with that. And I'm sorry, I don't disagree with that.
You also
but what
said,
you're missing a point is...
Just let the judge get the end.
And also what you're saying when you talked about the two-state solution is creating the Palestinian state. Well, tell me about this Palestinian state, because I don't get it. First of all, ideologically, they don't want a two-state solution because they want to destroy Israel and kill all the Jews.
Well, that brings Hamas here.
That brings the two-state solution to an end just by the ideology of Hamas. The second one is geographically, how do you deal with that? Then you got the West Bank, where you got settlements of Jewish people living there. Now, how do you deal with that? Then there is the capital. Is Jerusalem the capital of the new Palestinian state? So there is a range of things that we are so, so far away from that solution. And everyone is jumping on the wagon and saying, oh, the two-state solution is the solution. It's not the solution. It hasn't been possible for the last 60 or 80 years. So why are we going to some solution that is just pie in the sky? It's not going to happen. So we have to be realistic. We have to make sure that there is some kind of peace settlement where people, innocent people, can live, you know, a normal life and get fed. And now there is a proposal on the table that we should, well, in fact, everyone is welcome that. And we should work on that towards some kind of peace, because if you want to take it further and go for the two-state solution, you're going to break down the peace, because that is just so unattainable that it's just like, you know, speaking for the sake of speaking.
Presumably, when they say, you know, there will be consequences, we're not talking about more devastation in that particular area. You think he's going to go after the leadership who are sitting in their offices in other parts of the area?
No. Well, Israel didn't, you know, they didn't just go and bomb Qatar for the sake of it. They went there because that's where the Hamas leaders were. That's where some of the Hamas leaders were. They will go after the places where it happens. They went to Iran because they say it's Iran. And it's not. It's not just a few Arabs. It's not the Palestinians. It's the Arab nation hated the fact, remember, that the Jews were planted. They were planted. After the Second World War, Churchill decided for a peace settlement in order to appease what we had let happen to the Jewish people during the Second World War. We gave them a piece of land that they could call their own. It wasn't called Israel before. It wasn't called Palestine before. Yeah, forget all that. It was Jordan. And what we did is we took a lump of Jordan. A lump of Jordan and we gave it to the Israelis. And then we said to the Israelis, what then happened, in all fact, there was a two-state lump there. There was the West Bank. It did exist. The difference was that the Arabs that lived there hadn't sold their land to the Israelis to start up these communities inside the West Bank. So the Arabs were just as much to blame. Now, how do you do it? It's called you impose a settlement. But the settlement is, this is your area, you stick to your area. This is your area, you stick to your area. You have to compare it to other parts of the world where
partition,
it's happened.
But that's like saying partition, well, earlier, which we're coming
back
to.
That's a two-state solution is. That is partition. You can't have Gaza and the West Bank that are, what, 50 mile apart, 70 mile apart, whatever they are, and say, oh, this is one place. Because it's not one place, and you have to manage that how to do that. But what you can do is you can say, right, Israel, you're not allowed to go into the West Bank anymore. You're not allowed to have settlement. And the people who are in there, you've got to get out. Well, they're not going to move. This is why they're... At the end of the day, if people say, well, there's peace in Northern Ireland, there is some level of peace in Northern Ireland. People still get killed. Every month somebody gets killed in Northern Ireland over what was the conflict from before. People hold grudges. Yep. It goes, you know, families hold grudges. It goes on and on and on. But what you don't see is controlled. It's not rioting. It's not bombing Armagh or stuff like that. It's not that. So there is a level of peace. So you can only ever have a level of peace. And that's what I'm saying. It's going to be difficult, but it's imposed. All of that. And I tell you, in Northern Ireland, a lot of it is self-imposed. It was the people of Northern Ireland who said, we're not having this anymore. It was, if you remember, it was the mothers for Northern Ireland. Mm. Who said, you know, we're not having our children brought up in this environment anymore. And it wasn't religious or anything like that. So this, if you're going to find a solution, it's got to be a solution that is imposed. But I'm not saying that's going to mean peace. You will never have the Arabs saying, oh, we love the Jewish people living here. We love the Jewish people who have been dumped on doorstep.
I mean, again, we make assumptions on this. And as I said before, I mean, I remember interviewing a journalist or a guy, I don't know, it must have been 5 years ago, and he was talking about, you know, there was a Palestine football team and they played against the, you know, we are forgetting the people and we are
making caricatures.
There
still is a Palestine football team.
Yeah.
And they play, there's a lower level World Cup.
Yeah, but this was...
And they played in it last year.
I think this was something like, they were playing like Bethlehem, but this was a local league. Again, we are... You know, we are saying, oh, the Palestine, you know, and I've got messages coming in saying Palestine is not Hamas, as in the same way that Israel is not Netanyahu. I'm going to take a break, a quick first commercial break, and then I'll get back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live. The discussion continues, even though we're not on air. If you want to get your viewpoint across,
to contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Let's go. Oh, by the way, if we're having I've put on the Talk Radio Official a poll. Are you in favour of digital ID cards for the UK? Yes, 40%. No, 60%. Good morning to Christine saying, we literally all have these in Spain. Well, I think we'll come into this on the second half of the show. Some of the comments in. Good morning. Okay, so why would Hamas give up weapons? This is on the WhatsApp. Especially when they've created thousands of orphans who have nothing to lose. The Palestine is not Hamas and vice versa, nor is Netanyahu a representative of the whole of Israel. Andres is getting his knickers in a twist about Hamas when BN, Benjamin Netanyahu, was doing the same thing. But Netanyahu has zero jurisdiction or power to bomb another sovereign nation. If you want to get your... That's coming in on the WhatsApp. So,
Sovereign nation?
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I mean, and I say that and the phones go wild again. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Giles. It's strange to say you're coming out of the radio on my car perfectly, so I don't know why you said you're not on air.
I was talking to Alf, who was actually speaking. We weren't actually put the microphones up. I was playing a commercial break and he was in full flow, but thank you for letting me know that.
Okay, so we heard you say you're not on air.
To Alf, because I was saying to Alf, because he was talking...
Yeah, but you said it to everybody listening in their cars, houses and wherever as well.
Yeah. He turned the microphone on as he said to me, we're not on air, because me and Andreas were having a conversation.
That's fine. I just thought you meant that there was something wrong with the signal again, because I lost you for weeks on my car radio, and now you're back, so...
There is something wrong with the signal.
No, so we're on 106 now. We've changed for those of you.
I went away for the summer and I took a while to find you when I got back.
Ah, you see. Anyway. That's yes.
But you found us eventually.
Bye.
Thanks very much for the call in there. 952-78-4000. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Yes. Indeed. Right. So we're on air.
Okay, we're on air.
I'll shut up, Ben.
I haven't got any air, so... I'd like to come back to the bit about Tony Blair, because there's this unfortunately, Blair ended up with... It's not unfortunate, because it was the way of the world. Blair was perceived as being the warmonger who started the war in Iraq, which he didn't. It was Bush, along with Blair, and they supported it.
Dodgy dossier.
The majority, pardon?
Dodgy dossier.
Yeah, yeah, well, whatever. The American government come along, no different to Trump, comes along and says, you've got to do something about Ukraine. There's no discussion about that. It's your problem. You get on with it. And similar happened with Iraq. We think there's weapons of mass destruction. Blair got involved with that. So did, as I understand it, Spain,
yeah,
France, right. Germany, and Italy. They were all part of this because they all have connections with the Middle East. And so what then happens is we end up with this war, and Blair wasn't the prime minister after. Well, he was the prime minister for a long while after, but when he stood down as prime minister, whoever it was, whatever body of people, was it United Nations, I think, they made him not the governor, not the commissioner. He was the person put into charge of an organisation. It's now David Miliband who is in charge of the organisation, but it was Blair, and it was about how do you bring together the countries, all of the countries, all of the peoples of the Middle East, how do you bring them together in order to create? And remember, yeah, there were lots of things going on then. It wasn't just Iraq. There was Iraq, there was Iran, Saudi Arabia were supposedly a problem to America because of the oil and about what they were doing with oil embargoes, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And then you had Gaddafi and you had
it was an absolute
hodgepodge of problems. So Blair comes along and he's put, and somehow or other, I mean, forgetting the fact they took out Gaddafi and a few others, he created an organisation where at least the Arabs were talking to each other, because that didn't exist at one stage. Saudi Arabia talking, yeah, they talked to Qatar, but they didn't talk to Iraq. They didn't talk to the new Iran.
Right.
So he was put in to create that understanding. Now, just understand when we're talking about, we're not talking about 5 minutes ago, and Blair's been involved on the fringes of most of this international stuff since then. 30 years ago, Blair was the person who was doing this in the Middle East. 30 years ago, Netanyahu was the Prime Minister of Israel. Is that not significant? It's been going all of this time.
So you're saying he's got people will know him rather than being somebody.
Absolutely. He's not some dictator. He's not a commissioner. He's not a president. He's going in there to try and pull people together in order to talk through the issues where you can achieve some level of understanding that could come to a peace understanding. There will never be peace, but there can be a settlement, and there can be a peaceful settlement, and there can be, you know, people going back to leading normalish lives. That is what Blair, and don't forget, Blair hasn't parachuted himself into this. If he was, you know, if he was that left-wing nutcase, whatever, why has Trump selected him? Trump is not an idiot. I mean, I know he does some weird things, but Trump has said, I'm going to be the commissioner. Trump is the commissioner. The commissioner is the guy that can put money in, who can put organisations, pull organisations together, manipulate, threaten indeed. That's his function. But what he needs is someone under him who can go and talk, who can pull people together and go and sit in a room, not a smoke-filled room, a room, and talk peacefully, not about, you know, peace, but about in a peaceful way, about let's sort out our differences and see if we can find some way that we all live together, understanding each other's differences.
You think Blair is the man for the job?
Absolutely. He's been doing it for 30 years.
Okay, well, let's welcome Blair then.
He's already been there. And David Miliband is general secretary.
He's been mentioned recently because of what's been happening at the Labour conference, but I had no idea what Miliband was. I knew he was in New York.
No, that's Ed Miliband.
Oh, right, sorry, excuse me.
David Miliband is the General Secretary of the International whatever it is.
Who works with
the United Nations.
Look, Alf, if you think that the move of placing Blair to be some kind of nexus and a peacekeeper and everything, and that's going to work, I will support it. My first reaction to it was, is this another colonialist...
Left-wing warmonger.
No. It's just another colonialist imposition on the Middle East, which in the past has done so much damage. Are we going to make the same mistake by appointing another guy who is going...
Who was it? One of the American presidents brought in Kissinger...
Nixon.
Yeah.
No, well, then he brought in Kissinger. Why did they bring in Kissinger, who was technically the warmonger of America? Why did they bring him in? Because he knew all of the leaders of different countries. Okay. That's what Blair has done. Blair knows intimately all of these leaders.
I say the same. You know, I mean, the perception is that it's a colonialist approach. But if you are so convinced that Blair is going to do a good job, you know, I'm happy, you know, for Blair intervention. If he's going to work, let's put him in.
He's always had this equation,
if you want to, because he was always very much involved with the Middle East in the 90s. So.
He's always had this international view, though, because if you remember back in the day, he was saying he wanted the British Army to be the world's policeman. That was his thing. He's always taken, an international and global... It's funny to think of him as a senior statesman these days.
But that was rather than sending in... the United Nations forces, because they're restricted by what they can do. All the Americans come in who trample on everybody. That was your argument at the time. Or any of the other, the Russians or whatever, who would come in and who would be, this is us. So again, Blair was using the British Army as, we are and were the first peacekeeping force in the world. That's effectively logically, that's normal. That's historical. We've always done that. We've always played that role, the British Army.
I'm sure quite a few people in the
Colonised by the British Army. Yeah. Here comes the peacekeeping force.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Oh, marvellous.
Who were the first one? When they created the blue helmets, the United Nations, nearly all of the commanding officers of all of the different bits were from the British Army. Nearly all of them. Right, so yeah, of course you've got Germans and French and Swiss and Swedish and Norwegians and Finnish
and three Spanish.
Yeah. No. The Spanish have always had part of peacekeeping forces. They've always been part of it. And I'm not dismissing that, but these things don't happen just because somebody says, "I think it's got to be this." It happens because Britain, whatever anybody thinks, Britain were the biggest diplomatic organisation. I'm not talking about in the 2000, but in the 1950s and 60s and 70s, after the Second World War, Britain were the biggest of the diplomatic ones. They were the ones who were keeping, what's happening with Russia. Well, Kennedy, you're not going to push a button just because you don't like the Russians. It was British diplomats who were involved in loads of this. Why do they send them if they're of no consequence?
They didn't do very well in Vietnam in those days.
The British weren't involved in Vietnam.
No, I know, but the diplomats who were keeping the peace around, and
America wouldn't listen in Vietnam.
Happy to disagree with that.
Yeah, but they wouldn't. They wouldn't let Britain get involved in Vietnam.
Diplomatically, that is. And Wilson could never get stuff. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Right, therefore. And they're calling this the border peace, this thing with Tony Blair. Do you think this is going to be another nail in the coffin for the United Nations then? Because they're setting up these boards and they're going,
because one of the things that Blair will do is, the first thing he'll do is he'll be involving most of the United Nations countries who want to be involved. It's a bit like... These things don't just pop out of the woodwork. Oh, I've had this brilliant idea. The Coalition of the Willing that Starmer set up, it wasn't Starmer's idea. This is European countries who say, look, we can't do it for the European Union because we'll all be ham-tied. We can't do it with America because they'll just impose their wishes on us. We can't do it with this. We can't. So what we're going to do is we're going to try and create, how do you involve Canada, Australia, South Africa? How do you involve them in a coalition of the willing on an issue that's Europe? Well, they have. And they have because they talk to world leaders, and world leaders understand Australia ain't stupid. if they're not part of the Northern Axis,
yeah,
what's going to happen when China try and, you know, over? And they don't do it by sending tanks into Australia. They do it by cyber attacks. They do it by intelligence stuff. They do it by infiltration. They do it by all manner of things. And Australia need Britain, Canada, South Africa. We all need each other just for that. That's not about tanks or missiles or anything like that. That's about how do we know that the Chinese, well, everybody's saying these drones or whatever they are in Denmark, and everybody, you know, 99.9% of the world go, oh, that's Russian-based.
Yeah, so.
How do we know that? Because we have intelligence that we share. It's not because somebody says, oh, I think it's this, or Denmark have said they've accused. It's because they network their intelligence. You might not tell everybody your secrets or all your secrets, but you will share intelligence.
Just want to catch up on some of the bits and pieces, though, for this thing. Some of the news is Hamas is apparently considering the Trump peace deal, I feel a Nobel Peace Prize coming on, in good faith. No, because it's perfect for him, because Blair does the hard work, right? If it all goes proverbial up, then he goes, it was the limey. And if it goes well, guess he's going to be standing there and, you know,
absolutely,
going, exactly, that's the cunning plan. Right.
No, it can't be a cunning plan. It's not Blackadder.
Well, yes. I'm glad you got the reference. Right then, some of the key proposals are an immediate cessation of military operations, the release within 72 hours of the 20 living Israeli hostages, and the remains of more than two dozen believed to be dead. Hundreds of detained Palestinians and the remains of other Gazans are to be released by Israel. Hamas will lay down its arms and will have no role in governing Gaza. Once the sides agree to the proposal, full aid to be immediately sent into the Gaza Strip. That's quote unquote. Future governance of the Strip by a, here we go, technocratic, apolitical Palestinian committee. Technocratic, apolitical Palestinian committee.
So what's the acronym for that?
I'm not sure yet. I'll think about it in a minute. By an international board of peace headed by Trump. Yeah. And including Tony Blair and other leaders, plan leaves the door open for a future Palestinian state, although Netanyahu ruled that out yesterday.
What's to dislike about that? Can you find any holes in that?
Yes, there's no
future Palestinian state, which is...
No, there was no recognition of a Palestinian state, and Netanyahu said, I would never, ever agree to that. So that's one...
The thing that strikes me is...
Put all the fences up. There are still loads and loads of fences that are going to get in the way. It's about how do we compromise on those? Is there a possibility of compromising on some of those issues? Could there ever be an area that's called Palestine, but it's not a state? Well, no, it's not going to happen. Not because of Palestine and not because of Israel. It's because the rest of the world
It's not so much that there shouldn't be or should be a Palestinian state. It's that demands for the Palestinian state are not going to be accepted by Israel, because that implies the destruction of Israel. Unless the solution contemplates that the Palestinians respect the state of Israel, which at the moment it isn't, it's not going to happen. And then there are the geographical situation there is not very easy to manage. The capital is not something that is going to be agreed by Israel. Not only political reasons, but religious reasons.
Or the Palestinians.
Well.
They both claim Jerusalem.
There is an enormous difficulties to create that situation. What we are in front of now today is a deal that will give a peace, hopefully lasting peace, upon which you can build something more.
Yeah.
But that's what everyone involved should be focusing on is building on upon a peace deal that is doable.
That's
because
mediation.
Everything that I'm looking at on those points that you just read out, Giles, all of those points, they're all doable. they are all doable. So let's do it.
I mean, one of the things that strikes me is this fact about the aid, because, I mean, obviously they've only got 4 aid stations at the moment. We know the hassle that's been, you know, coming from there. It's going to take a huge... I mean, if you want to have some sort of peace in the Middle East, you are going to have to rebuild that
Gaza
section. Yeah, but not, you know, not in the way that people are, you know, that certain sections are saying it's going to be the Riviera of the... And you're going to have to put the infrastructure back in, yeah, and you're going to have to put the education of these young people...
Here's you hit the
proverbial...
Nail on the head.
If you allow...
It's an English phrase.
Yeah, no,
I don't think it's equivalent in Spanish.
I know some of them, not all of them. but that is key, because the education... and from here onwards, has to be of mutual respect, and that is something that is not in the education system now for the majority of Palestinian children, where they
are for Israeli children,
but they are taught at an early age.
You will have to put an infrastructure.
So there has to be a very...
Just go back to...
An important impact on the
Trump's
education
first
system.
Term of office?
So...
What I've forgotten about is my ad break. So back after this.
Let's get the mic.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live. If you want to get your viewpoint across to today, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And I've been sent a poll here saying that... People are sending us polls every... Exactly. I asked for a large cheque, I got a small poll. So, meanwhile, I got a poll being sent in. This is about Trump possibly winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Thank you. It's saying, this is in Polymarket. Sudan's emergency response something or other... 24% on, apparently. Okay. Navanaya, of course, 9%. The Medecins Sans Frontières is on 6%. Donald Trump, 4% of winning. And Greta Thunberg, currently sailing the ocean blue, last I heard, she's on 2%. Thank you for that. Talking about polls, if you want to get involved with our... No, if you wish, we're going to be, in the second half, we're going to be talking about ID cards and what it means. So I've been asking if you are in favour of digital ID cards if you're in the UK. Currently, we have a split of, we're straight down the centre, 50-50. So go onto Talk Radio Official, cast your vote, and I'll read a couple of comments out of as well in the second half of the show with the poll there. I'm joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo, and in case you haven't mentioned, Alpha's with us as well. So
just going back to what we said,
yeah.
Trump's first term of office, because this is where I agree with Andreas, is these people from a distance who don't quite understand what's going on, who come up with these... solutions. So if you remember, Trump came up with this solution about Jerusalem to build a new city, as if Jerusalem is of no consequence to him. Remember, both sides claim Jerusalem as their capital, both sides claim it as their religious home and all that. So, and they, you remember, they built the new American embassy on the edge of the West Bank, and they were going to build the city to make it the new capital. And you go, what do you... It never happened, of course it would never happen. But this is what happens when you get things like the Trump knee-jerk, let's say this. What's happening at the moment on this thing, it's a wish that there can be some sort of level of peace. But if you look at all the things they've put into place, and Andreas is quite right, it's very difficult to argue against any of those 20 points. It's called just get on with it. The complication is it's not for us to get on with. It's not even for the Israelis to get on with, or America, or Blair, or anybody else.
Correct.
It's for Hamas to agree with, and just that's going to be the difficulty.
Just want to talk, we've got a WhatsApp here. Thank you for that one. I'm not sure who it's from, but someone should point out to the panel. So that'll be me pointing out to you two, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. Don't point at me, it's rude.
I'm not, I was just, that was just, I'm just, yeah. That Hamas charter does include recognition of an Israeli state. The panel should look at what the Likud party charter states on a two-state solution. The concern is that both the US and Israel never honour agreements. So why should Hamas agree, as once the hostages are handed over, it will most likely be curtains for Gaza? Okay. And I've got to stop calling you Elf. What were you, Elf?
Elf. No, Elf. National Elf.
National Elf. So, so where weren't we?
A well-liked person,
right,
maybe.
So, okay, that's why, because we're calling him out. So I've got Samuel L. Jackson saying, go on, do it one more time, Melvin Farmer. Not the actual words. Right, 2 minutes of the first half. In the second half, we're going to be looking at the ID question, because many of us are asking who on earth we are, as well as I suppose we can look at the Labour conference. It's been quite interesting. And if you support Reform UK, are you a fascist? That's, well, I'll answer that in the second half. Andreas?
No, I was going to say, having Alf here talking about the Labour Party conference could be quite enlightening. Just to finish the first half on what I said before, I mean, this peace deal that is on the table is welcome. Difficult to for me anyway, to criticise if that is agreed and put in place. We might see some kind of peace starting in Gaza, some food getting through to the people who need it, and that's what I would like to see.
As real people say, we live in hope.
We live in hope. But up to today, or yesterday when the announcement was made, I couldn't see the end to it, apart from total destruction
of Gaza.
So basically, just to have a little bit of hope that a peace settlement may be in place soon. It's a positive thing. I'm just looking at the positive here. I know that, you know, the guy who sent the WhatsApp was saying, you know, oh, if they agree to that, it'll be the end of it and all. But it's just looking at the negative. And I like to look at the positive. And in that sense, the what's on the table that was put yesterday, are great. And if it works, and they want to give the Nobel Peace Prize to Trump, just go ahead and do it. You know, the important thing is that the peace settlement is reached, and then we can move forward.
9527 84000 is the phone number. If you want to get, by the way, you can't leave. I know if you call Stephen Ritson, you can WhatsApp Stephen Ritson and leave audio messages. I can't play out audio messages from the studio, so I can only take memes or GIFs, or you can just send me, but don't send me a voice message because I can't read it on, or I can't listen to it on +34645 996795. Right, we're going to national international news, and then we'll be back for the second half of Viewpoint here on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. The news is up next.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint. And welcome back to second half of Viewpoint here on Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Talk Radio Europe's discussion show with a panel of invited guests going through the issues of the day. If you want to get involved with the show,
to contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000, email studio@tre.radio, send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Yes, indeed. Just to let you know what's coming up later on today on TRE Talk Radio, your voice in Spain. Follow me, Stephen Ritson, as always, with Europe Today. Selena, it is Animal Day today, Animal Talk, but at 3 o'clock, worth the price of entrance alone. I would say that's Selena with the Lifestyle Show. Hannah is away. However, Anna is standing in for her, of course, so that's with Thierry in the afternoon before Howard Brighton comes back. A safe pair of hands with Spain Today for now before a repeat of Viewpoint. If you missed it or you want to listen to the best bits over again, don't forget you can listen to between 7 and 9. Don't forget also there are a myriad ways to listen to TRE here. You can listen via the website on tre.radio. There's an app for it. There's an app for everything these days, and we are no exception. Purely go to Talk Radio Europe, wherever you get your apps from, and we shall pop out. You can carry this show around with you and hear my and Alf and Andres' dulcet tones through the day. And if that's not enough to send you thundering towards your app store, I don't know what isn't. Right then, looking at some of the bits and pieces coming in I've got the poll is still running because we were talking about digital IDs. I think we'll do it now because are you in favour of digital ID cards from the UK? At the moment, yes, 58%, no, 42%. So, Andres, you wanted to talk about digital ID cards, and so therefore...
Yeah.
You sounded a bit worried there.
What I've noticed is how he's been shifting the poll, your Facebook poll.
I mean, yeah.
From in favour, against, and everything. It's quite interesting.
Well, you know, we have our moments, Andres.
The key thing in the question is the word digital.
Yeah.
Because, as your listeners will know, in Spain, you have to have an ID card. It's compulsory from the age of 14.
From the age of 4, then, from
the age of 14. Up to the age of 14, I think your parents' ID represent you. At the age of 14, you have to have your own. And it's quite, for a Spanish person, I mean, I remember when I was 14 and I had my first ID card. It wasn't quite an exciting event, having to go to the police, you take your fingerprints taken. And then
your experience of going to the police station is entirely different to my experience of going to the police station, Andres.
I knew you would say that. Anyway, so eventually they give you your final sort of ID card, a physical one.
Yeah.
And you know, it's compulsory. You carry it with pride for the first 6 months.
You're in school going, mira.
Of course, when you're 14, you know, I used to show it to everyone. Look, I've got an ID. Like, meaning, you know, I'm an adult now because I've got an ID card. After 6 months, the novelty wears off and then you use something to carry in your wallet. It's compulsory to carry it at all times. Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you if you've got yours on you now. Don't worry about
look,
that.
Look, it's here. I've got it here.
It could be, yes.
Yeah, I just produced it for
there you go,
those
yes.
of you who don't have a camera.
Exactly, yeah.
It's something that is, for us, it's normal. And if you ask a Spanish person and you tell them, you know, the British don't have an ID card, and the first thing they'll say, really?
Mm.
And how do they manage? That's the first question. Anyone, just try it. Go out in the street and try it. And ask, tell the Spanish person that the British don't have an ID card, and they'll be shocked.
The one of the things, that, of course, it is quite interesting because there has been a pushback against this. I mean, one of the things, and Sam, Sam has sent this in on the Facebook page, which says the situation in Canada, because people are worried about what the digital ID card.
Okay, that's what I said at the beginning. The key word here is digital.
So let me just say what Sam's very kindly sent in. He said he's looking at Canada, right, involving the freezing of bank accounts. It's a stark example of how digital IDs and financial systems can be leveraged for control. In 2022, Canadian government invoked the Emergencies Act to quell the Freedom Convoy protests. Okay, this is right. So the key aspects of the actions were emergency powers, Trudeau's government, financial measures. Banks were empowered to freeze accounts without court orders, something we're quite used to in Spain, actually, to be honest with you. Controversy and criticism. The move was criticised for potentially infringing infringing on charter rights and freedoms. And the legal fallout, Canadian court ruled the government's actions unreasonable and prompting an appeal from the government. So implications for digital ID and control, surveillance and financial leverage. Digital IDs can be tied to financial systems, which can enable governments to exert control. Such measures highlight the risk of government overreach and erosion of privacy. And they say this is going to empower governments to silence dissent by strangling financial lifelines. It's a descent into authoritarian darkness. chilling free speech. The potential for abuse is staggering, threatening the very fabric of democracy. This should never be allowed to happen. Safeguards against such overreach are essential to protect individual rights and liberties. If you're an autonomo in Spain, have a small business, you are used to getting your financial stuff frozen. And that's just how Hacienda are up to. But,
Or the courts as well. All those arguments. The reason why I said the key is digital is because now in Spain, for instance, you've got your physical card. Your physical card is something that you use for opening a bank account, for the police, for the tax office. It's your tax number as well. You can identify yourself. You can travel with it. There is a lot of use that we make out of that. The key digital thing is that now in Spain, you can download an official app.
They love an app,
You have an app and you have your ID card on your phone. They've done that because a lot of people who didn't want to carry the physical card, they would take a picture of it, and then if you stop by the police, you show a picture of your ID, but the police wouldn't accept that because that could be tampered and so on. So they found a way of saying, okay, you can digitalize it and carry it in your phone, so you don't have to carry your physical one. I've got the app, but I never sort of downloaded it, and I don't use the digital side. For two reasons. The first reason is that I'm absolutely useless with technology.
Welcome to our world.
And then the second one, I thought, do I really want my ID on a digital platform with all the breaches of security and everything else? So it put me off. Yeah. The reality is that there is no need to worry because your data is already out there. Your Amazon account has got your details.
Just going to say, because Richard's come in going, privacy, and he spelled this, oh, please, as in three words. People are quite happy to put everything on Facebook, Google, Apple.
Exactly.
But have an infinite,
Your Amazon has got it, your shoe shop has got it, so your data is already out there. So in terms of privacy, what more privacy you need. The only thing is that, of course, we hear more and more often of breaches of data in companies like Marks and Spencer's or Jaguar or all of that, and then you hear all that and people sort of are a little bit conscious of putting their data out there. But believe me, it's already out there. So you're not doing it. It's handy not to have the physical card and you have it in your phone. However, it's not accepted in an airport, for instance. So you have to dig out your physical card to go to the airport. So really, with the physical card is enough. It's ingrained in our culture to have these, and I don't think there are many countries who do not have ID, not forget the digital side. Not many countries have got, I don't know how many.
True. In Europe,
there
are only two countries that don't have ID cards.
And they are?
Britain and Southern Ireland.
Otherwise known as the Republic of Ireland.
Otherwise known as ERA.
Indeed, thank you very much.
More names do you want to come up with?
Okay, so there you go. So all of the countries, they have ID, and, I don't see the problem.
It's not only that, Andreas. This is a mindset, because you're right. I live in Spain. We're used to all of this.
You have your ID.
Oh, we have everything, more than just ID. But even if you was in England, it's just, I carry all my credit cards and everything. So you go, first thing, bank card. What's the bank card? Oh, it's not digital because it hasn't got my photo on it, right? But it's got a chip. And if that chip hasn't got all my details, I would be very surprised. Now I go to the next one. Driving licence. Driving licence doesn't have a chip, but it does have my photo on it, and there's all my other details. Even the stupid, because I'm one of the old boys in the country, I get a 65-year-old discount card from Carrefour. Carrefour send me probably...
Other supermarkets are available, by the way.
Well,
just
yeah,
so
but, yeah, but yeah. Carrefour is the only one I know that's got a club card. And every week, three, four times a week, they will send me, you haven't bought this product for a while. Here's some more things you might be interested in. Yeah, all that advertising. But they also tell me how much I've spent, how much I've saved, where I spent it.
In what shops, what addresses, everything.
Yeah. Whether it's in Ipacor, the hypermarket, or whether it's in the local market, or whether it's in the gasoline area. Which gasoline area? Because I use two of them. And it just, and you go, why are people so worried? Then I go to the doctors and I get another card, and that's got a chip on it. And I tell you, because you say Hacienda, it's not just Hacienda, it's almost everybody. And you're right, you go to a judge. One of my family stupidly didn't pay their IBI, and they thought they'd get away with it for 7 years. And then when they come back to it, they just went, it's this. What they didn't know about my family members was unbelievable. And then they go, we're not asking you. They just embargoed the bank account.
Yeah, well,
that wasn't the judge, that was the
understand
that's
it,
the patronato. There's different different bodies that they can embargo your account.
No British person, no English person would accept that somebody could go to your bank without telling you and empty it. Nobody.
Yeah,
nobody would say that. But here, it's just I'm
against that.
I'm against
the embargo. And I'll tell you why. Because I forgot to pay something, and I got embargoed. It was only a small amount, but I thought, just imagine that the amount was bigger, and I was a father of a child who needed to go to school and they need to pay the school fees or whatever. And suddenly you're embargoed, and you are at zero in your account. You cannot pay the school fees. You cannot feed your kids and everything else just because there's an embargo on your account.
Yeah.
I think that's totally unfair.
Absolutely.
I mean, you should be on top of your payments and be correct
and
everything.
You can go to the social.
But you should have you should be advised. You are advised. Then called the Boletín Oficial del Estado, which is the official bulletin that is published every day.
Yeah.
Now, tell me how many of the 40 million people in Spain read 48 million, how many of those read the Boletín every morning before breakfast? Nobody. So it's as good as not being notified, the truth being said. So I think it is an unfair thing, but yeah, the system allows for the tax office, the patronato, and the courts to embargo your account.
Without telling you through
a channel that you're not going to find out.
So back to the...
Especially if you're a foreigner.
Right, so back to the main of the point before we go and have a rant, because, you know...
Just one more point quickly that I want to make on the ID. There was an attempt by your friends at the Labour Party in the 90s to introduce the ID card. I was in the UK at the time, and I remember saying... Why they have so much objection to it?
Because
I find it so natural. And at the time,
there was only one objection.
The cost.
It's against my human rights. There were no other, and I'll tell you for why, because my mate was the Home Secretary. Alan Johnson, was the Home Secretary. He was on the telly just on Sunday with... Kunzberg, or whatever it is. And they showed the clip of him holding, he was at Paddington, I think, holding the card up when they tried to introduce it. But I remember, because it was Blair's government, and it was it was Gordon Brown's government, I think. And anyway, Alan was the Home Secretary, and they were trying to introduce ID cards, and there was only one single issue why the Labour Party people at the conference voted against it, and that was, it's against my human rights. That was it. It wasn't none, oh, I don't want my phone.
I seem to remember at the time there was an element in cost as well. Some people would say, well, the cost of rolling these out to every single person in the country would be too expensive. Well, so it was binned at the time.
Of course it's
only to be raised again 30 years later.
Because, I mean, so this was at a time before, you know, the other days of the internet, so people didn't think about putting their details on the thing. So at the time, I remember people saying, oh, it's George, you know, but they always go, it's 1984. Mm. I mean, the UK isn't it the most surveyed society?
CCTV.
Yeah, everywhere, face recognition.
The most cameras in the world now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Certainly
yeah.
in Europe.
Yeah, but it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't make sense. We've said it. Your data is out there. Everyone has got your social media, your accounts on all the things, got your, you know. And he said, oh, I don't want my privacy to be, you know, taken through an ID card. It's like saying, you know, I'm not having the COVID vaccine, but I'm happy to take a line of Coke that I bought some guy, you know, down the road. It just doesn't make sense, you know. Well, I mean,
and it's even,
how unsafe would be.
You've just blown your
right. Like,
yeah, thank you, Andreas,
for that. It's even more basic when you.
That's going
because you have to do it from the mind of someone from Britain and what happens and what they do and what they understand and how they get on with it. It's, I mean, some of the things that we say, and they're just junk. It's just the Brits have always been, we're British and we're different. And you go, yeah, but don't you think it will be safer to do this? Don't you think this? Don't you think... And they just switch off, Andreas. They switch off and go, no. And it comes down to simple things. And they might have an argument that says, oh, it's going to cost us too much. But, you know, at the end of the day, the issue that everybody went, oh, it's against my basic human rights. And I go, I tell you what.
Can you quote them? I tell you,
absolutely. I tell you, classic, okay? If you write a will in the United Kingdom, you put it in a tin and hide it under the floorboards. That's what you do with a will, because, or you put it in the bank, or you give it to a solicitor, or you do whatever. Over here, what happens? You write your will, it gets sent to the Bank of Spain, and it's on record forever, centrally held. So any will you write goes to the Bank of Spain in Madrid and is held there on record. You can't do that in England. You lose the will in England. It's probate and called those 20 years before you can get any money because of...
I didn't know that.
Right.
What? So, about the will. I haven't got a will, so that's probably...
Somebody hasn't even got away. Don't worry about that. Now, moving swiftly onwards, I've been sent... exactly. I've been sent... Thank you, Tim, who's sending me a picture of J.D. Vance and President Trump. That scene from Goodfellas saying, and then Starmer said, digital ID will stop the boats coming. Which, yeah, exactly. So while we...
Really?
Listen, there's one thing. Right, let's go and slash a boat. That's a deterrent.
Yeah.
Let's talk to the French about stopping them at the beach. That's another deterrent. Let's have a go at the people transporters. That's another deterrent.
Transgender, not transporters.
Transporters. Transporters. It means the gangs.
Sorry. Gang transporters. I thought you meant, sorry, I was miles away.
Transporters is a new word to me.
I'm not sure how much influence transgenders have on people crossing
the boats.
Transporters.
Yeah. Yeah.
The people who, what are they called? People.
People traffickers.
Transporters.
Then there's, you know, ID cards. It's another deterrent. And then there'll be, we're sending them away to a different country. It's another deterrent. You know, put 40 deterrents in. Do you know what? It's illegal in the UK to kill somebody. Has it ever stopped it? No. But the law says you can't kill anybody. But you put deterrents in to keep it, you know. So instead of everybody wandering around with machetes killing everybody every day, it reduces the number because there are deterrents at a point in place. Traffic lights are a deterrent. Road traffic things, you know, the speed things.
Bollards.
A deterrence. No, the yellow lamps are flashing too fast.
Felicia
Beacon.
They're
deterrents. They don't stop people speeding, but they're deterrents. If you speed and you get caught, you pay a fine. You know, so much of what we do, if you can pass whatever laws you want, but unless there's somebody there enacting the law, they're just a deterrent. They're just a knowledgeable thing. So much of what we do is a deterrent. And the ID cards, to be honest, is another deterrent. What would be the biggest thing is getting hold of the companies who employ the people who shouldn't be employed and dealing with them. So when you saw in one of the southern England towns, they went after all the eat me, is it, whatever, feed me, the motorbike guys with the food on the...
Go, just eat.
And they go into the town centre. All of a sudden there's 50 motorbikes laying on the floor and they're all running away. Because we all know they're illegally working. But they never went to eat me or whatever and said, right, now we're doing you.
Alf, you can't say that the ID card is going to be a deterrent when a lot of the countries with ID cards have got the same problem with immigration.
Very similar.
Spain would be the great example. We've got an ID card, we've got a problem with immigration.
We've
boats are coming through, you know, so the same kind.
You have a problem you have people coming over on the ocean. You have people coming. You don't have as many. We're not talking about a couple of thousand people here. 400,000 people, the new Home Secretary saying that she's looking to deport out of England. 400,000.
Yeah, but that's not five or six.
Only 30,000 immigrants into the UK came over on a boat this year. 780,000 came over on planes, ships, not rubber boats, ships, planes, travelled into the UK.
But surely these people will have passports to come through this.
No, they don't.
To go through the airport, need to have...
Indians. I've said this on air loads of times. India, part of the trade deal with India was to do away with the visas for their people to come over on student visas.
Yeah.
Because what they can do, because of what... What's his name? The fat man who was a prime minister...
Boris Johnson,
him as well.
Can I just hit a break here? Because we've gone from ID cards. because you've gone into the migration situation.
ID cards is a deterrent, and you go, okay, so I understand.
I don't think it would work as a deterrent. I mean, the issue with ID cards is the practicality of having one and being something that is used for a number of things, from your tax, your medical, everything. You know, I know you've got a medical card,
but it's only to be used for employment.
So,
and this is a complication.
But you already got other forms of ID, like your national insurance in the UK. You've got your card with your national insurance number and everything. So I don't see what the... Apart from the cost of rolling it out to 70 million people...
Charles, if he's ever seen his card with his national insurance number. I mean, I've got...
I mean, about 20 years ago, I think. I fell down the back.
You'd have a national insurance number, but you wouldn't have a card.
It was blue. It was blue and red.
Yeah, but most people... because you're a foreigner.
Yeah, I like my card. I like to have
Exactly. That's strange. That's the photographs almost identical. Then stay on topic. I'm getting chastised here. Hang on a second, by a listener. Stay on topic. Thank you. The digital ID in England has been provided as a solution to stop immigration. Also, I've been sent a picture of the Irish passport card.
There you go.
Just so you know, I've got no idea whether that's the same as an ID card, but that looks
the same as a Spanish passport card.
Yeah, but you said that...
You have a passport card, don't you?
No, that's a passport card.
That's a passport. ID card.
Fine.
They don't have to carry that.
Right, okay.
And if you haven't got one, you haven't got one.
If you don't travel, you don't need one of those. It's what you're trying to say.
Yes.
Okay.
Andorra is that apparently you don't need a ID card because they just look at your bank.
What do you mean Spanish? Andorra is not Spain.
Where else can they go other than Spain or France? Well, unless they fly.
What? Sorry,
what's Andorra? It's in the Pyrenees, isn't it?
Yes.
So what's one side? Spain. What's the other side? France.
Yeah.
So you're telling me they can just wander in and out of those countries?
No, but then you need ID cards. For the Andorran.
You just said they didn't have ID cards.
Okay, just look at your bank balance. I mean, that's fair enough, right?
Excuse me. No, this is interesting. Do the Andorrans... I don't know these. Do they have ID cards or not?
I know about Andorra. Right, meanwhile, this is what... The thing about Andorra is what
Steve Ritson will be typing away in
tells us. Yeah, Stephen Ritson can tell us all about... Right, settle down.
Calm down.
Right, here we go. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. It's Peter.
Morning, Peter. A voice of sanity in a world gone mad.
Oh,
especially when your guests tend to talk about the boil on their ass when they got cancer. I mean, the whole show is just going around in little sound bites and all in Lewisham and all in the idea, the doctors and all that. The thing is what people don't understand is we've had this creep for so long towards this totalitarian state and this globalization, and this is all part of it, and they have to do it in little parts because each generation comes along is more acceptable to what's going on, and everybody dies off and they can push in the agenda. And I know everybody rolls their eyes when you mention globalists and that, but Rishi Sunak tried to introduce this, and if anyone remembers, Rishi Sunak's father-in-law is the owner or the CEO of Infosys, which is a digital company that wants to digitize or chip everybody in the world. This is where we're going to, like this Chinese, because AI is coming in. Only the other day, the BBC said 1 million jobs gone in 5 years in London. Everything is going, and the internet, we've had the oil industry, the oligarch oil people, we've had the bankers. We're now moving to the technocrats, the billionaires, the Elon Musks and the Peter Thiels and all that. So these companies are benefiting from all this because they put money into the campaigns of these globalists. And it's like when you were talking about the war earlier, Israel is in such a strategic place and they're so technically astute. Then if you look at the One Belt, One Road, which I mentioned months and years ago from China, it comes from China all the way to Israel. Once they go through Israel, they bridge into Europe. Then you've got the INSTC, the International North-South Trade Corridor, coming from Russia down to Iran into Israel. And it's about shifting stuff around the world. Now, we're going to go on this infrastructure boom, and it's all about the new gold, which is data. Now, if you go to Abilene in Texas, they've just partially opened and building a data place, and Texas is full of data places. This place is huge at a cost of $500 billion. And the security on it is unbelievable. Now, you and I getting a digital card, we all know that we're partially tracked and we get an advert about Samsung TVs or whatever. But the bigger picture is the social behavior and you will not be able to sign into the internet. You will not be able to take part in any conversation or go onto the internet or search anything without putting that digital ID in there. That's the creep. That's the way we're going. Total control. But I guarantee you one thing, it's not going to stop people trafficking, drug traffickers. That's a massive industry. It won't stop any of that. It won't stop the illegal animal tracking and the artifacts. That will be down the line. It will be the 80-year-old woman at the airport who didn't sign in and is being told she can't board her plane to go and see her daughter get married. That's the problem we're going to have. And it's creep, and it will go there. So look at the big infrastructure companies. And by the way, the data place in Texas, in the States, they just said they want 20 of these at $500 billion. That's $10 trillion. So the infrastructure they're going to do, and all this One Belt, One Road, the international North-South trade route, all the infrastructure they're going to have to build, the dome cities. People just cannot see what's coming. And now, hopefully, it will take long enough for me not to be here. But it doesn't stop me saying to my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, well, at least I tried, or I tried to open people's eyes. But to sit there and say, well, you've got to go to the doctor and show your card, it's not about that. It's not about that at all. And Israel, you might get peace in that region for a short while, but the bigger picture is who's going to control those trade routes? Who's going to shift that stuff? Because without the jobs, doesn't mean we're not going to have infrastructure. We're still going to build super cities and smart cities, and that's mostly going to be done by robots. And we're just going to be pawns in the game. But we'll be the ones that are being told that you can't do X, you can't go to that concert because your car crossed a white line, like in China.
Social and credits and all places. That, yeah.
Social credits and all that. Yeah. Total control. It's, it's like living in... what's his name? Jim Carrey's movie?
Truman Show. Right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling there, Peter. Good to hear from you. Yeah. Take care. 952-78-4000. Looking at some bits, Peter. Straight right for viewpoint. Are you aware that Tony... I'm going to take a break because I've got two to go. So here we go.
Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Yes, indeed, here with the Illuminati. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. For the last 22 minutes or so, I just want to look at some of the WhatsApps that are coming in. If you want to send a WhatsApp, you can't. I can't take audio clips on WhatsApp. Stephen can. I can't. I can't also answer phones on the WhatsApp either. And I don't think Stephen can do that either for very good reason. However, you can call me on the, or call me or contact me in these numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Before we tackle, we keep going on about the subjects we've been talking about, I just want to look at some of the WhatsApps that have been coming in. So they are of a variety of subjects which we've tackled this morning. Okay, so bravo, Andres, a man who speaks truth and has a real handle on the situation in the Middle East. Alf has never mentioned October the 7th, and his remark about the British government post-war dumping the Jews there in Palestine is somewhat offensive. Learn some history, Alf. The Jews are indigenous to this region. Palestine was a name given to this region by various conquering empires throughout history. Jews were dispersed. How can there be a two-state solution whilst Hamas remains in control? That's one. Two, somebody tried to call in. Is that today's? No, that's from 2 years ago. Thank you. Huh? It's, you know, no, things pop up, and that was 2 years ago, but anyway. Stephen Richardson has replied, panel.
Okay.
So, ready for this. In Andorra.
Right.
There are customs... I think he's got one of his many houses there. You know. there are customs... there are
You have to be very rich to buy a house in Andorra, I'm telling you that.
I once had a conversation with my accountant when I was living on the lake, and I said, if it gets any worse, I'm going to put a shed on the back of one of my 17-foot boats, go out into the middle of the lake and declare myself an offshore financial centre. And my accountant said, in your case, that is a good idea. Right, so, in Andorra, there are customs checks, mainly for goods like tobacco and alcohol, which are cheaper in Andorra, but there are no routine immigration checks for travellers arriving from Schengen countries. Fine, but that still doesn't seem to be about ID cards. Do you need ID cards?
That's what we wanted to know, yeah. Steve.
Mr. Ritson to you.
Mr. Go to Google. Yeah. Do they have ID cards in Andorra?
So,
which we don't know.
Right. Meanwhile, Tony Blair is going to make millions on the implementation of the Brit card. Okay, fine. I'm not sure how we got Tony. How would Tony Blair? Oh, I know. Here we go. Because, thank you very much for coming. For Viewpoint, are you aware that Tony Blair has been the biggest proponent for digital ID? The biggest donor to the Tony Blair Institute is Larry Ellison, the billionaire founder of the tech company Oracle. $130 million donated, $240 million pledged. Are you also aware that the company Multiverse, who operate in the tech's AI jobs field, is substantially owned by Ewan Blair, around about 50%, which is worth about $2 billion? Was that the one they found slumped on the square? Anyway, it's a big... You remember that. It's a big club and we aren't in it. This is the same club they beat you over the head to comply. For your information, Ewan Blair is Tony Blair's son. Yes, I know, but he was the one who was found...
Yes, and of course there were Jews who lived in the Middle East.
Yes.
I'll come back because people criticise us.
I was just going to finish off the only three WhatsApps before you...
I thought you'd finished.
Right,
you took a breath.
I took a breath. Andorra does not have ID cards. Meanwhile...
Thank you.
That's all right. Bloomberg reported that the project had not started and no funds were raised to meet the project's initial $500 billion budget. Market uncertainty, American trade policy and AI hardware valuations caused delay, according to a Bloomberg News report. No national identity cards in the principality, passports, driving licenses in Andorra, and most commonly used for identification. When visiting France or Spain, a driving license may be accepted. Okay, and here's something. Is that Richard sent me something, but I'm not sure if that's actually just now it's come in. And I'm trying to read it. I'm trying to do what Stephen Ritson does, and I'm failing miserably. So. We shall go.
So there was no state of Israel after the Second World
War. Back onto that one.
Yeah, no, no, no.
Yeah, okay.
Because people wouldn't be critical. Yes, they did.
Don't dig it too hard.
No, no, I'm not. But you have to. Gil will be on and tell us all about the history of the Jewish population.
If you build it, they will come.
But Churchill and others, didn't they not put the. We'll have a settlement. It's called Cyprus. So they put their camps, army camps in Cyprus, where they put the displaced Jewish people. But because that wasn't good enough or whatever, the Jewish people that were there said, well, we're going to do this. And they get in boats or whatever, and they sail across to what is now Israel. They then created the state of Israel. And all of the Jewish people who were displaced from the camps or anywhere else in Europe where they wanted to go were allowed to go to this new place, this new state, and it is a state called Israel. But the state, was it not Gil? Was it not Jordan? Or some part of Jordan that they took? So they did dump, is what I use the word, because they had nowhere else to support them, because there was no way they were going to allow them to go into Cyprus.
What the Allies did with the displaced Jewish people after the war was a total disgrace.
Absolutely.
A total disgrace.
And the second thing, because people want to do it, is I love Peter coming on because he just wants to belittle me every time and he thinks I'm an idiot. Well, he just says things like, oh, an ID card for going to the doctors. Right. The point I was making is that there's nothing wrong with ID cards. We have to use them for all sorts of things in Spain. But Peter makes this thing, oh, people can't see this coming. People can see this coming. That's what is all the concern about people seeing this coming.
Yeah, but
what they can't do is they can't understand how they can influence it or stop it. That's what people can't do. And I keep on saying it. I know Peter doesn't agree with it, but there's only one way, and it's political. It's getting governments to say, we're not going to allow you to do this. Unfortunately, you end up with somebody, and
they go,
this big company's doing this.
The question that should be put into the equation here is that, do ID cards, yes, I'll be very quick, Giles. Do ID cards going to make things more efficient or not? I think it would make it all more efficient.
To the lines we go. Okay. Morning, good morning, Cooley, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint?
It's Gil from Calpe.
Ah, you see, if you say the name, it'll turn up.
I heard my name, so I thought I must call. But I missed most of the program because I was I teach from home, so sometimes the students want this hour, so I have to give in. Anyway, there's a lot of history. I don't want to go through it, but just to make a few comments. Jews always lived in what today is Israel continuously in the past 2,000 years since, the Roman times. But as a minority, sometimes as a minority, and under somebody else's rule, okay, not as an independent state, okay? So people did live there. Now, if you regard, let's say, indigenous people, those who lived, let's say, before the 20th century, before the Zionist movement, okay, then yes, there are Jews who are more indigenous because they lived like previously. But amongst the Palestinians, it's the same. I mean, there were Arabs, so those who are ethnically Arabs who lived in the country before the 20th century. But most of the people we call nowadays Palestinians emigrated to the country between 1920 to 1940, when the British ruled the country, because they were looking for work. Very few Palestinians, those who call themselves Palestinians, they are indigenous, okay? It's not as if they say, oh, we lived here for generations. It's simply not true. And you can tell it because, people have visited the Holy Land over the years. Mark Twain visited the country in 1867 and claimed in his book that the country was empty. Yeah, the book is called.
Maybe they just try to hide from him, Gil. Probably.
Pardon?
They're probably just trying to hide from him. You know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but there are many people. I mean, there was a Dutch monk who wrote a book called Palestina Ilustrada in 1714. And he actually lists all the different communities in every town in Israel, yeah? And he mentions Jews and Christians, and he say there were very few Muslims. Most of these were Bedouins, people are nomad passing by. So there's a lot of evidence. In addition, you can tell by the surnames, because many Arabs have geographical surnames. Like we have names like Jack London and Bert Lancaster, yep. David Essex, yeah? You can tell where their ancestors came from.
Yeah.
And with the Arabs, most of them have surnames according to the town where they came from. And most Arabs in Israel and the West Bank included, their last name is a name of a place outside of the country.
Sure, yeah? I've got more calls coming in, Gil. So just to sum up, please, yeah?
Yeah. So to sum up, you know, there's this concept as if the Palestinians are the indigenous people, and the Jews somehow arrived from Europe, you know, and took that. That's just not true. Okay?
Thank you very much for your call in. Good to hear from you as always. There you go. If you know, I said you could call your name, and he's there. Meanwhile, back on the other line. Thank you for waiting, Jason. I've only got a little time, so you have the floor.
Really quick, then. Yeah. So I'm not as articulate as Gil, but what I would say, I do know in the Bible it says, "Thou shalt not kill." So, and that includes what Israel's doing. In Palestine, Hamas are just as bad, betraying the Quran, but both are really betraying God. And there's no defense articulate argument against that, because thou shalt not kill. But that's not what I wanted to speak about, Giles. The ID card,
yeah.
Really quickly, was it Peter? Well said, Peter. Very astute, very on the ball. ID cards are not the problem per se. We are sliding down a totalitarian road. Cash will go. You'll miss that just like your knees when that's gone. We've got artificial intelligence, quantum computing on the horizon. We've got surveillance on a scale that's almost George Orwellian. And where we are going is we are losing our civil rights and our freedom, and we are becoming robots. Thank God, like Peter, I'm not a sheeple. I'm still a person. And this is where we're going. And in your cars, the better monitor you're driving soon, you'll get credit scores on your insurance if you're a good driver. They'll be in your car, right? Where does it stop? What happens is you forget where you come from, and you end up this artificial robot on a wheel going round and round, just a commodity in a society, and then you're done. Because once we get to that stage in our evolution, right, there's no way back.
Jason? As always, good to hear from you. Going to commercial break, and then back for more Viewpoints.
Viewpoints on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Into the last 7 minutes of this morning's Viewpoint. Excuse me. Let's have a look. Oh, let's go to the poll, shall we? Are we in favour of digital ID cards in the UK? 60% are saying that you are in favour of digital ID cards, and 40%, strangely enough, saying no. Meanwhile, any agreement that Gaza has to avoid any religious aspects, the game has to be technically beneficial business deal for both parties. Thank you, Richard. The line was flashing, but then it wasn't. So just looking at any point. Just looking, okay, so Netanyahu said the IDF will remain in most of the territory as part of the plan drawn up with Trump, and that Israel did absolutely not agree to a Palestinian state. Thank you, Richard. Also, the commitments here differ considerably from both the Trump and Netanyahu's subsequent interpretation of it. I'm sure that if Senator Stephen, because he will go through this like the fine brain that he is, while mine is a bit like, you know, like mashed potato at the best of times. To the lines we go. Morning, Cooley, live on TRA. Just quickly, what's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Calpis.
Yes, Gil.
Just to correct something. The Bible doesn't say do not kill. That is in the King James translation, and it's a mistranslation from the original. The original says, thou shalt not murder. And that's the difference. Occasionally, you have to kill because you have war. You have to fight against evil. It's sad, but that's reality.
Thank you for that one, Gil. Yeah, thanks. Thank you for the callers. You see, that's St. James. That's his thing.
I'm always accused of murder.
What?
I'm always accused of murder.
Right, fair enough.
It's called the English language.
Yeah, you're murdering the English language. Well, that's King James I and the Sixth of Scotland did indeed. Looking at... Hello, there's nothing... Sorry, excuse me. I didn't mean something like that. Meanwhile, on the line, morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Giles. This is John Rehash. I'm just
curious
about with your poll... Do you know, by any chance, what percentage of listeners you have that are Spanish residents and the number that are perhaps UK residents?
Unfortunately, I don't have that information. I'm not, you know, I can't hack into their digital IDs, John, so I'm not actually sure.
No.
Yeah.
It's just that I'm curious because I suspect that the vast majority who voted against ID cards don't live in Spain, because we're so used to them. It's so straightforward.
Yeah.
And it's such a useful thing to have. I used to be a police officer, and when I was a police officer, my warrant card was in my top pocket. Whenever I needed ID, warrant card. When I retired, I got lost without an ID. So I think all those people are against it.
Yeah.
Once they get used to the idea, and as you said, I missed most of your program, you said earlier that we're all traceable anyway.
Yeah.
Every Big Brother knows where we are at all times. Yeah. So therefore, an ID card just makes life so much easier. Okay, I'll leave it.
Thank
you. Good program.
Thank you very much indeed. Andreas.
Yeah, the point you just made is just the question that requires an answer is having an ID card, will it make things smoother, easier and everything? The answer, I think, is yes. I mean, if you want to live in this world of conspiracy where our data is stolen and put into some place in Texas and
it's being stolen, it's being hobbed,
isn't it? I mean, if you have to live your life like this, it's not, there's no point, you know, you have
but
to relax
see,
a little
but
bit and understand.
I think what is also what people like, what the panel, and I don't want to say, because please stop using each other's names sometimes, but you should also have the option, should you wish to step away from a digital lifestyle and be independent and use cash and, you know, have the access to heat and light. And I think the points that are being made by some of the callers in are the fact that you won't have that option because you won't be allowed to do anything. You won't be able to, you know, get into a car because you won't be able to participate in, well, not only.
Do you really think that you can live outside the society today's age?
50 years of Brits living in the Costa del Sol, yes, you can. Yes, there were hundreds of them who lived here under the radar.
The amount of effort you will have to put in to be outside the radar, it's
go to the
is it worth it? That's the question. Is it worth it to be outside the radar? You would have to operate in cash. Yeah. You would, and how? I mean, I know this man was laughing about
biggest,
having to access the doctors, but how
done,
do you? You
the
know.
Biggest thing Spain has done recently that's disrupted the British community is now you can't have more than €1,000 and just use it.
Huh?
Well, you now have to justify.
I'm a freelancer, I never have more.
You can't make payments of more than €1,000 in cash.
Wouldn't
that's
count
correct.
For you, would it, Giles? Because it's like you've got to have more than €1,000.
Yeah.
So, like, we listen, cash in hand. Oh, I'm having a job done at the moment. They go, it's $3,200. I go, okay, do I get a bit off if I pay cash? Because then you can.
Yeah, but that happens in every country.
You can't do
everywhere.
That now. You can't do that now because they can't pay the $3,000
into the bank. Yeah.
Without justifying it. So what people are doing is they'll take some of it and they'll use it for their shopping for 2 or 3 weeks, and then the rest of it they'll pay into the bank, which means they ain't paying tax. On what they're this is our self-employed people operate.
Yeah, but that operates everywhere. I mean, that happens in the UK,
happens everywhere.
That happens in France.
It happens everywhere, but
okay.
Spain, single biggest
what?
Autonomous community in Europe. It's everybody's country. Self-employed.
All right.
No, not anyway, everybody's self-employed.
Right, on that
lots,
bombshell,
lots,
the,
lots,
right, my, not, right, you've
lots
now,
and lots of people self-employed.
That's another question.
That's another whole viewpoint.
No, that's a whole new viewpoint.
I have my own theories on that. Right then. Thankfully, we're almost out of time. We didn't even get to talk about.
Oh, well, I want to say, yeah, absolutely. We didn't talk about my mate Starmer.
No.
Because you started off the programme and I just wrote down Starmer is too polite to react to poor innuendo. So you started the programme off by saying something about Starmer, and I thought, oh, no, we're going to have this nonsense. Not you, but that's what you get.
That's for all the viewers.
Loads of people ringing in going, oh, Starmer this, oh, Starmer that. And I go, if you really want to know what Starmer's thinking, watch his speech today. And yesterday, two best speeches I've heard for a long time. Rachel Reeves doing her bit, which because it was bland, it was the you're not going to argue me. And more than that, David Lammy was exceptional. I don't like David Lammy, arrogant bugger, but he
speaks very early.
Well, he was absolutely, absolutely magnificent yesterday, in my view.
How long until the election, Alf?
3-4 years.
Right, so we can people can start worrying about reform and the Labour Party in 4 years' time. Right.
3 years' time.
Andreas, thanks.
That's a very good point. But we have to say goodbye. The time has come when I say thank you very much.
Andreas.
Giles, and I will see you very soon.
So what sort of friend is he?
Is he? Yes. Supreme.
Supreme friend.
You're a supreme friend as well, Alf.
Right, we're all supreme each other into a thing. Alf, thanks very much for your help
thank
today.
Thank you.
This show will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson has got to diffuse that one. Have fun, Stephen. Stephen Ritson up next.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.